南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。All right, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. I hope you're well and safe. And we will continue today with the Nirvana, the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, not to be confused with the Nibbana, the Hinayana teaching. I think we're going to delve into the Four Truths thing. We'll talk a little bit about the nature of the Tathagata, chapter 12. And then we'll jump to, the Nirvana, once again, and then on the Bodhisattva, which will be another conversation with Kashyapa. These people, the great multitude that showed up to chant Shakyamuni Buddha into extinction. That didn't sound right, did it? Shakyamuni knew his time was coming. And so he put the word out. And after teaching the Lotus Sutra for 8 years, he prepared for his extinction. And as he did so, and probably quite purposefully, let the word out early, his followers came from all over the place, and others who'd been watching intently what he was doing during his lifetime, like the Brahmin at the near the end of the Nirvana. These people who maybe wouldn't step forward before, or who were around all the time but were afraid to ask that one nagging, doubting thing, they came out of the woodwork. And they all honored Shakyamuni. They were all terrified that after he was gone, that would be the end of the teachings. Shakyamuni prepared them well for this because hundreds and hundreds of monks were seriously trained for years in the recitations of the sermons. So they memorized them word for word. And I've always found it interesting that as they memorize all the sutras, you'll notice they're written in the first person. I this, I that. They start out, thus I heard, which is the attributed to Ananda, the foremost at the time, and a cousin of Shakyamuni, who was relaying the sermon to whoever might be listening. But everything was translated in the first person, so you could imagine, as you read the Lotus and other sutras, built into the words is self-reflexive. I have been around so long. I practice this, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, already, even in the form of the teaching itself, he is telling everyone that Buddhahood is innate in everyone. In fact, it's innate in the nature of all phenomena, right? Universe, planets, stars, all of it. I've always found that interesting. Really strong learning device. Almost subconscious, you might say. Is that as you're endeavoring to get every syllable and every word right and intone every single phrase and verse correctly, you might not be fully aware that this is something you're saying to yourself. Literally, but I mean, also mentally, training yourself in your true identity, right? Anyway, I get off track. So people are coming to him at this point, and it's captured in this sutra. It's like their final resolve, their final point of questioning. They have this last opportunity. So they're going to ask, even though maybe for years and years and years they haven't. And some of them might be repetitive. I still don't get it. Shakyamuni, please help me. And Shakyamuni is doing his thing here in his duality, right? In the Lotus Sutra, he did that drop the mic moment where he said, look, I didn't just attain enlightenment in this lifetime. In other words, Buddha is an always extant thing. And I speak as from that voice of the Buddha mind. But don't lose sight that I'm just a human. I'm a bodhisattva. Shakyamuni is the great sage of the Shakya tribe. Shakyamuni is his bodhisattva name. And he is teaching the experience which he himself has attained of Buddhahood. And he stays in Buddhahood 24/7. Something we're all trying to emulate. And the Lotus Sutra is that final word on, okay, this is how I did it. You can emulate. Now that you understand what's going on with your bodhisattva, your samsaric self, just invoke Myoho Renge Kyo, invoke your Buddha mind. Right? So this is after the Lotus Sutra. So basically, this is a question and answer session just before he goes extinct to try to quell the fears of all these great practitioners, bodhisattvas, people still learning, people who have well mastered other philosophies like the Brahman. And ultimately, they all get converted because he allays whatever doubts or confusions they may have had. That's the Nirvana Sutra. So here, a very basic question at the beginning is on the nature of the Tathagata. And here we go. Kashyapa said to the Buddha, O world-honored one, is there self in the 25 existences or not? We're still dealing with the cultural imperative at the time of this reincarnation mentality, right? And, you know, to the monk's credit, Shakyamuni used that as an expedient means throughout his teachings because he knew his audience, right? Even in the Lotus Sutra, he talks about his own past lives and so forth. But he's just trying to explain that Buddhahood is always there. It's not something that appears once in a millennia. It's in the process of life itself. The Buddha said, oh, good man, self means Tathagata Garbha in this instance. The Buddha womb, the Buddha embryo, the Buddha nature. Every being has Buddha nature. Could he say it any more simply? This is the self, the true self, the reality of selfness in the entire universe is to perceive with this clarity, this Buddha mind. That is the self we're trying to discover and release, which has been there all along. The whole purpose of samsara is to experience this amazing process. But it's not a self of identification. See, that's hard words. It's not a non-self. It's simply non-identified. It's simply the energy, the experience of witnessing it is our Buddha mind. This is the self. Such self has, from the very beginning, been under cover of innumerable defilements. Defilements. What are, that word is popular in translations. But by defilements, we know as Buddhists that what this is a translation of is dukkha. It's the illusory, identified, clinging self of the limited samsaric experience of life in the rapids, remember? That is why man cannot see it. Because they're defiles? No, because they're veils of, they obscure the true experience of this entire massive, incalculable, if you will, immeasurable, words of Shakyamuni here, experience. This whole engine of life. Myoho Rengekyo. Oh, good man, imagine that there is a poor woman here. She has true gold concealed in her house. But none of the people of her house, whether big or small, know of it. But there is a stranger who, through expediency, says to the poor woman, quote, I shall employ you. You must now go and weed the land. The woman answers, I cannot do this now. If you let my son see where the gold is hidden, I will soon work for you. The man says, I know the way. I shall point it out to your son. The woman further says, nobody of my house, whether big or small, knows of this. How can you? The man says, I shall now make it clear. The woman says further, I desire to see, pray let me. The man digs out the gold that had lain hidden. The woman sees it, is gladdened, and begins to respect that person. Oh, good man. The case is the same with the Buddha nature, which man has. Nobody can see it. This is analogous to the goal which a poor woman possessed and yet could not see. Oh, good man, I now let persons see the Buddha nature that they possess, which is overspread by defilements. Overspread, it's covered up by illusions, clinging to all the stuff. You don't see the nature of all phenomena. This is analogous to the poor woman who cannot see the gold, even though she possesses it. Now the story sounds a little more clear. I'll fault the translation. The Tathagata now reveals to all beings the storehouse of enlightenment, which is the Buddha nature, as it is called. As it is called, because there's the thing and there's the name for the thing, and that's one thing too much, right? As Laurie Anderson would say. If all beings see this, they are gladdened and will take refuge in the Tathagata, the experience of being one with the Buddha nature. The good expedient is the Tathagata, and the poor woman is all the innumerable beings, and the cask of true gold is the Buddha nature. So, without reading the whole thing, I think we get the picture. The Buddha nature, the nature of the Tathagata, is that it's already inherent. It's here and now. It is the substrate of every phenomena. You, me, stars, moon. The fact that we don't perceive it is the alarming thing about our craving nature, right? Chapter 16 on the Bodhisattva. This is about resolve, I can tell you already. It's not about how educated you are or how many sutras you know. It's simply about your attitude and your intent. What are you doing? What is your life based on? Money? Relationships? Or is all of that stuff, sure, part of the human existence? But if that's what your life is based on, suffer. It's that simple. Base your life on enlightenment, on instantiating your Buddha-ness. All of that other stuff, it's great, it's wonderful, enjoy it, and be miserable about it, whatever. But don't be attached to it. You'll find that your emotions, instead of going, start to get less peaks, less dips, and you become more equanimitable. It doesn't mean everything goes away. It means your experience of them is replaced by a knowing, an experience, a knowing. You hear in the translations, all knowing, knowing, knowing. The word knowing comes up all the time. Don't think of knowing as a crude knowledge, a crude data, a crude information. Think of knowing as profound insight. That's a different kind of knowing, right? Also, next, oh good man. And now, is he still talking to Kashyapa here? Who is he talking to? Yeah, he restates, if you read this sutra, he restates himself over and over and over again. Oh, here, I missed this. On the parable of the moon is always out. It has by nature no coming or sinking down. The same is the case with the Tathagata, the alms deserving, the all or sinking down. The same is the case. He manifests himself in the 3,000 great thousandfold worlds. Or he gives the semblance of having parents in Jambudvipa, of entering Nirvana in Jambudvipa. The Tathagata by nature does not enter Nirvana. Because I'm always there, right? Because Buddhahood is prerequisite to all phenomena. So, I didn't see who he's talking to. No matter. Of all the lights, the light of the sun and the moon is unsurpassed. No other lights are their equal. The same with the light of great Nirvana, which is the most wonderful of all lights of the sutras and samadhis. It is one which cannot be reached by any of the lights of any of the sutras. Oops. Yeah. And samadhis. Why not? Because the light of great Nirvana causes bodhi, Buddhahood. That is why we say Mahaparinirvana. Bodhisattva Kashyapa said, now we know who you're talking to the Buddha, you say that the light of great Nirvana penetrates the pores of the skin of all beings and that it calls forth the Buddha mind if beings do not have it. This is not so. Why not? If that is so, what difference can there be between those who have performed the four grave offenses, those who have committed the five deadly sins, and the Ichantikas, and those who uphold the pure precepts and practice every good deed, if it is the case that the light penetrates the pores of the skin and causes bodhi, enlightenment, to come about, if there exists no difference, how is it that the Tathagata speaks about the significations of the four things to stand or rely upon? O world-honored one, in contradiction of the fact that, as you, the Buddha, say, if one once hears great Nirvana, all defilements will be annihilated. You, the Tathagata, stated before that even if a person gives rise to bodhicitta, their resolve to gain enlightenment, at the place of the Buddhas, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, there are yet those who do not gain the meaning of the great nirvana. How could a person make away with the root of defilement without gaining the meaning? O good man, all people, other than the Ichantikas, gain the cause of enlightenment as soon as they hear the sutra. If the voice of Dharma and the light of great nirvana penetrate the pores of their skin, they, such people, will unfailingly attain unsurpassed enlightenment. Why so? If anybody truly makes offerings and pays homage to all the Buddhas, they will surely gain occasion to hear the great Nirvana Sutra. Persons not endowed with good fortune will not be blessed with hearing this sutra. Why not? A person of great virtue will indeed be able to give ear to something that is important as this. Common mortals and those less in grade cannot easily give ear to it. What is it that which is great? What is that which is great? It is nothing other than the hidden store of all Buddhas, which is the Tathagata nature. That is why we say important. Bodhisattva Kashyapa says to the Buddha, how can a person who has not yet given rise to bodhicitta hope for the cause of enlightenment? Buddha says, if anyone who has heard this great Nirvana Sutra says that he will never give rise to bodhicitta and thus commit slander, such a person will see the Rakshasa in a dream and feel afraid. And the Rakshasa will say, hey, good man, if no bodhicitta comes about in you, I shall assuredly take your life. Feeling afraid and awakening from his dream, the person will aspire to Buddha. We've heard this story in longer form, I believe, in the Lotus Sutra. After death, that person will be born in the three evil realms or the world of hungry or humans or gods, and he will think about bodhicitta. Now that this person is a great bodhisattva, thus the great divine power of the Nirvana Sutra well enables person who has not aspired to enlightenment to attain the cause for enlightenment. Now, all of this happens within the lifetime. He's just describing an aha moment, right? And sometimes it takes people a great trauma to finally realize what's essential in life. I've talked about this ad nauseum in like car accidents or anything that happens. Maybe it's a loved one that suddenly dies. There's all sorts of great traumas that human beings experience in their lifetime. And it's a very odd thing in 2020 hindsight to look back onto the days of that trauma and the days and weeks after that trauma, the way we see and perceive life and demand of life so little. We just want comfort. We want to be comforted. We want to be loved. We want to feel connection, because that's what's at stake in that trauma. The very nature of having this life experience becomes the singular point of focus, however you term it. And I've told the story about waking up after major surgery, thinking going into surgery as, this is it, I'm not here anymore. And my waking thoughts upon waking up in the ICU were simply an overall sense of not understanding why I was here, while being flabbergasted at the quality of the light. And I had a view onto the ocean from my hospital room. I mean, a very idyllic almost scene, other than my, you know, being in a hospital bed. I couldn't understand what, and I thought, what do I do now? And then the thought came to me as I settled into now being alive and feeling like I didn't know how to proceed, then the world of desires, you know, we're in samsara, comes up. All I wanted was to turn to my side and see a loving face, an awaiting face, not a particular face, just an abstract face. And all I wanted to do was tell that face, thank you. Like, not even complicated, just thank you. It was only later than I thought, I guess I was thankful for like this new life, reborn, if you will. In those moments is when we're not defiled by all of the clinging wants and desires. We just, the simplicity of what we need becomes more obvious. And so that's what that story is about, right? And actually, I'm a little curious about this translation, because if you missed it, he did say that the Pratyekabuddhas would not, the Achantikas, more accurately, would not attain Buddhahood. But we know that's not right. In the Lotus Sutra, he made specific reference to their gaining. But the way that they gain entrance into the Buddha mind is to raise their commitment, their resolve, their seeking, not intellectually, but experientially. That kind of resolve. And the intellectual, the Ichantika, he's the one that lives in the brain all the time. But it doesn't compute. But if I do all the steps, it'll happen. Ugh. Namo myoho renge kyo. Just let it happen. It's already there. Right? You ever argue with someone like that? It's frustrating. Okay. A person does not see or do good. What he does is evil. This is much to be dreaded, as in the case of a road that is steep and hard to pass. And this is Ichantika as he's talking about. How do we see what is done? How do we get to good dharma? And where is the place that knows no dread? It is as with the flat kingly road. So he's talking about the path to enlightenment. So I think it's interesting, it goes on and on, that this chapter on Bodhisattva, what originally was is now not. What originally was not is now. There can be no is obtaining in the three times. So again, it's about clinging to past, present, future, clinging to the logistics of enlightenment. You know, it's just silliness. Just be there. It is, as we've talked already, without time. In the chapter 17 on the questions raised by the crowd, now he's going to entertain questions by the multitude that have arrived. So basically they're all scared to death. When you leave, I mean, I'm hardly getting this, right? I'm practicing, I'm doing as I'm told, but I'm also trying to raise a family, or I'm trying to keep my crops alive, or I'm a merchant, or whatever, and I'm struggling to do this, and I have this distant dream of enlightenment, which they're not getting it because they're intellectualizing it. Enlightenment's already there. You just need to open the window, right? To whom can we now make offerings? Their fear is once he's gone, they have equated, this is the thing, they have equated their enlightenment, their nirvana, their release, their whatever you want to call it, their attainment of Buddha, to be something that is given to them. So if we give you offerings over a lifetime, maybe we'll give you enough offerings that you will, to use the Christian term, we will bless you, or the Islam term, whatever, religious term. You will bless us with Buddhahood, like it's given to them. And you know, a lot of organizations today that call themselves Buddhist organizations operate in that way. If you just learn Gangyo, then we'll give you our little scroll, right? It's like a carrot. Buddha, Shakyamuni never, ever said that, said anything like that. The only thing he ever talked about is your attitude. If you really want to be enlightened, then you will be enlightened. Namo myoho renge kyo, it's already there. Wake up, awakening. He didn't give anything. If the closest thing, and I hesitate to say this because I don't want to equate them, but you might get that impression when he says that all of the Ichantikas will attain Buddhahood, or that in specific, like the Dragon King's daughter. But if you read the story, she suddenly attains Buddhahood. He didn't hand it to her. Through her actions, she became Buddha mind, actualized, which is what we're all doing. He didn't say, okay, here's your certificate, you're a Buddha. Where, anywhere, does he do that? And I'm saying, regardless of anything you've read from Nichiren, because Nichiren hammers this, right? It's like, how many thousands of years does man have to go along before he gets it? And you know, I mean men, women, and all of the sub-genres today. Anyway, they're all scared to death. You're leaving, you're dying on us. I guess we're doomed. What are we going to do? So then the world-honored one, in order to console all those gathered there, spoke in a gatha. And do we have time to do this? Yeah, what the heck, we'll take the time, right? Do not weep. The Dharma of all Buddhas is thus. It is now innumerable kalpas since I entered Nirvana. I have already always received the best of bliss and rested myself forever in peace. Now listen with all your heart. I shall now speak about Nirvana. I am now segregated from the sense of taking food. I now feel no thirst. I shall now, for your sake, speak about the vows step by step and cause all to be rewarded with peace. Again, he's being forced to act as though he's handing it out. But you and I, we understand, right? He's only doing this as an expedient. He's compassionate. He's worried that these people, they won't have the will to go on. And what is the most important thing to our practice? Resolve. Resolve, resolve, resolve. Be confident. No matter how many layers of illusions you have in your samsaric existence, the foundation is Buddha. Be confident. Listen well and practice the eternal Dharma of all Buddhas. If crows and owls live in a tree and make friends with one another like brothers, I shall now gain Nirvana for eternity. The Tathagata views all beings as he does Rahula, as his own child. I shall always be the most honored one to all beings. How could I enter Nirvana for all eternity? If snakes, rats, and wolves live in a hole and become friends with one another like brothers, I shall enter nirvana for eternity. The Tathagata views all beings as he views Rahula. He always becomes the one honored by beings. How can he stay long in nirvana? If Saptaparna, a bitter plant, changes into Varsika, jasmine, if Karu, Jenshin, changes into Tinduka, Diospyros Embryoteris, woo, then I might well enter nirvana. The Tathagata views all as he views Rahula. How could he abandon compassion and enter nirvana for a long time if an Ichantika could, in his present body, attain enlightenment and first grade bliss? Interesting that it's graded. I wonder if that's USDA. Then I would certainly enter nirvana. The Tathagata views all as he views Rahula. How many times is he going to repeat that? Attitude, 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 attitude. How could he abandon compassion and enter nirvana for a long time? If people all at once attain enlightenment and abandon all evil, I shall certainly attain nirvana. See, this is a bit of a trick. It's the expedient means again. And he's been saying this since the first Four Noble Truths. If you behave with resolve, correct attitude, and intent, then I, Bodhisattva Shakyamuni, there's no need for me to go through this drama of dying and entering nirvana, because nirvana's there all along. Your Buddha nature is already there. You see how he's trying to get people who are almost forcibly ignorant to just listen, think. How could he abandon and enter nirvana for a long time if the water of mosquitoes and sawflies could indeed wet the whole earth and fill the rivers, valleys, and seas? I would enter nirvana. My compassionate heart views all as I do Rahula. I am ever the honored one of all beings. And how could I belong in nirvana? For this reason, seek deeply for wonderful dharma. Do not be over much concerned, nor cry, nor weep. If you desire to act rightly, practice the eternal of the Tathagata, harbor the thought that such dharma lives long and that there is no change. Also, be mindful of the fact that the three treasures are eternal. This will beget great protection. It is as in the case of a dead tree, which as a result of magic charms brings forth fruit. Such are these the three treasures. All of you, the four classes of people, give ear well. On listening well, joy will arise and bodhicitta will come about. Resolve, attitude, intent. If the three treasures come about as eternal and are as paramartha satya, ultimate reality, that is the utmost of vows of all Buddhas. So once again, he is repeating himself over and over again. You already have Buddha awareness, Buddha-ness, as a fundamental nature of your very existence. The fact that you're not experiencing is your own resistance. Change your mind. Notice, though, and are as paramartha satya, ultimate reality. This is like I've been saying to you over and over again now, and I'm sorry I'm so repetitive, but we don't lose the eight consciousnesses when we gain the ninth. I know that's a callback. But there's this idea that Buddhahood is somehow a different place than the one we're in. It is not. It is everything that we experience in this lifetime is enlightenment. The only reason it's not is because we're preoccupied with hanging on to the things. It's as simple as it gets. Have the things, you know, the things come and go. Don't invest your identity in things. Invest your identity in not things, but the formations, the energy of it all. It all is the same, including self. That self is immense, would it not be? If you really could see that everything was of the same vat of stuff, then what need would there be for classifying, identifying, cubbying, this is this, this is that, this is not that, this is... It's all Myoho Renge Kyo. It's all Buddhahood. That's amazing. It's the kind of human response to an only child. But not everybody is a parent. Not everybody wants to be a parent. Not everybody had parents to admire. So maybe that analogy worked then. I don't think it works so much today. But the point is, something so precious that you're clinging to your own individualness is no longer important. Right? You know the story, even if it's not you, of the mother who will go through ridiculous self-destruction, the act being to protect her child. A father who will subject himself to response from society, go to jail, offer his life just so his son, who may be absolutely guilty, that doesn't matter to the father in this analogy. He just wants his son to live longer, to have the opportunity to attain bodhicitta or bodhicitta, however you want to pronounce it, the aspiration for Buddha. Attitude, intent. He's been saying this all along, and in the Nirvana, as he's about to pass away, go into extinction, he's repeating it once more. Albeit different terms, different words. All of it is encouragement to continue as he taught in the Lotus. The rewards of being a Bodhisattva, the rewards of being a teacher. Read the Lotus Sutra, or better yet, go watch my 40 some odd videos on every chapter of the Lotus Sutra. Nobody can give you your Buddhahood, and no one can take it away. Why? Because it's, I hope you understand, right? It's like floating in the ocean, right? And somebody offering you a teacup of salt water. You would look at him and you go, what? Are you stupid or are you expletive here? Right? You know, are you insane? You can't give me salt water. That's how you should be thinking about your Buddha nature. You're in it. The only reason you think you're not in it is because you think samsara. So have samsara, but don't identify with it. Don't be samsara. Follow? Oh, it's so simple when you say it. It's simple when you say it. It's called Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. All right. That's it for today. Thank you for listening to all of this. I hope there are sparks, something in what I've read or maybe said that make you pause for a second and maybe get a new insight. Anything that feeds, that energizes your resolve, your knowing that Buddhaness is yours and you can experience it no matter what you think you're going through. It's a self-imposed duress. You don't need to think it. Just get through it. Get above it. Move on. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you. With deep appreciation. Is it like, subscribe, share? That's shoju, right? That's bodhisattva work. Be kind to yourself. Sometimes our clinging, our craving, our obstacles have very deep claws in us. So if you feel like it's not really happening at the moment, you don't know why, you're chanting and chanting, and doesn't seem to be changing, have confidence. It is changing. It's albeit at a level that you may not be aware of. And whatever that cloud of unawareness is the thing you're chipping away at. Get out of the way. If some karma takes time to render, take apart. Like clarifying butter. All right. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for your support, your donations, your eyeballs, your ears, downloading the podcast, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.